At first, I'm closed up like a flower.
Mm-hmm.
Bud.
Yeah.
And the petals start to open, and then I finally learn about myself, and I learn how to enjoy sex.
Beautiful.
And I feel free.
Hey everyone, it's been a 007 back again to discuss Lovelace, which is a deeply affecting, incredibly sad movie about the porn star Linda Lovelace, famous for making Deep Throat. Now, as always, these 10-minute movie reviews are spoiler-free and are not explicit. However, it's worth mentioning that in discussing the subject matter of this film, we are going to have to discuss quite explicit material, so if you have any little kiddie-winks around, this is not suitable listening material for them. So I think Linda Lovelace really needs no introduction. She became a pop cultural icon in the 70s when she made that absolutely huge commercial success, Deep Throat, famous for its... what is it famous for? I mean, I suppose it's famous for a particular type of fellatio, but it's also famous for having quite an absurd, almost surreal comedy tone to it. And for the aspirations of its director in making it something more than just a skin flick. It was also kind of the first porno that kind of became mainstream insofar as people would go on date nights to see it, the queues were around the block, and, you know, chat show hosts were making fun of it. So Linda Lovelace, the star, became famous in the mainstream, but I think she never became a mainstream star. And if she had any naive ideas of becoming a mainstream actress, those were certainly crushed. So the story of the making of Deep Throat is something that's been gone over in some depth before, both on screen and in books. I mean, Linda Lovelace herself has written two very powerful autobiographies. There's also been a documentary called Inside Deep Throat, which is very good at giving a very balanced view of what really went on. But what I love about this film is that it has a quite clever conceit. It splits itself into two halves. So the first half, you sort of see the Linda Lovelace story as legend, as glittering, sometimes funny, exciting progress of this young, naive ingenue who grows up in this very sort of sexually repressed, oppressive suburban home and is swept up by this very glamorous older guy called Chuck Traynor and kind of almost accidentally slips into porn, that's the way it feels, and seems to be very happy to do it, very bubbly, and wants to be an actress and thinks this is going to sort of catapult her to fame. And when you see her at the glittering red carpet events, she's meeting Sammy Davis Jr., she's meeting Hugh Hefner, and her name's literally in lights. So that takes us to halfway through the movie, and then we kind of switch to another gear, and we see her 6 years later, looking much older, very frail, taking a polygraph test and describing the reality of what was happening behind the scenes. And that's when we really see some of the material that's in her autobiography. We learn that her husband, Chuck Traynor, was incredibly emotionally manipulative, incredibly abusive. He was a guy who ran a bar, but also was a pimp. He pimped out his wife. He forced her to go into porn, basically to make money to cover some of his debts. And that she was by no means a willing participant in the skin flicks, and that she was filming Deep Throat with bruises where he'd battered her, and that people on set knew full well that he was abusing her in this way, and yet were very pleased to have this girl with her unusual skill make them all some money. We also learn that behind the glamour of these red carpet events, that everyone who met her assumed that they could get a free sample, so to say. Most disturbingly in the film, a scene with Hugh Hefner, where he tells her that life is going to imitate art as they watch the film, which is really creepy. And actually, if you read the book Ordeal, she makes some pretty nasty allegations about Hef. Certainly, the degree to which she was tricked out and the kind of sexual acts she was asked to perform come across as far worse in the book than the movie. But the movie is already pretty rough going. It's a pretty tough watch. And definitely, it's the kind of movie that you want if you have daughters who are of a certain age. You want them to see it because it's a really cautionary tale about letting a guy get that much control over you. So as that part of the movie comes to a close, we see Linda Lovelace, I guess, in the early 80s, when she's written the books, she's now going on talk shows in her new sort of proto-feminist, anti-porn crusader way, which also seems a little bit like a persona. It's like she's had the persona as the ingenue, the persona as a porn star, the persona as a wife and mother who's trying to reclaim her history, and now the persona of an anti-porn crusader, and they're all identities that she puts on. And very early on, I think, in the movie, there's an interesting question where the polygraph tester says, are you Linda Lovelace? And she says, can you ask a simpler question? And there's something very deeply true about that moment. In terms of what is Lovelace like as a film, I think it's probably rather misunderstood. This is not a film about the porn industry. If you're going into watching Lovelace thinking that you're going to get Boogie Nights or Wonderland, that is not what you're going to get. This is very much a film about domestic abuse. And so it's far less like Boogie Nights than it is like What's Love Got to Do with It, the Tina Turner biopic. And because it centres very much on that domestic abuse relationship, it can at times become quite histrionic because that's just the nature of the material. And therefore, at times it can seem a little melodramatic and very overwrought. But I'm not sure that can be helped. And some of the critics who say it feels like a sort of afternoon TV movie of the week. And I have some sympathy with that view. I do struggle with it because I'm not sure you can portray that kind of domestic drama without attracting that label. But this is not to say that it's a poorly made or simplistically made film. I mean, first of all, that conceit of showing it the public life of Linda and then the private life, I think, is very clever and very effective. I think the production design is absolutely superb. You really get a feel of the 70s through the costumes and the hair. And Amanda Seyfried, well, I guess she's wearing brown contact lenses and this brown hair and this afro, incredibly convincing physically in the role. I also think that there's a very clever choice made by the director of photography who shoots that first segment on, I guess, 60mm film to give it that kind of nostalgic, half-remembered feel of watching old home movies. And that it makes it seem very... It adds to that sort of warm, fuzzy, warm tones glow that we have to that period and suckers us into the charm and wonder and naivete of those years. And then when he's filming the second half of the movie, which is the reality, the style of shooting becomes much more crisp, much more focused. And it's a very subtle, subconscious way of moving us from perhaps misremembered nostalgic moments of the 70s to the harsh reality behind it. Incredibly effective indeed. In terms of the acting, I think Amanda Seyfried is utterly convincing. She brings that that purity and delicacy and vulnerability that she had in Les Misérables into this role. And yet, at the end, when we see her take control of her life, that's also similarly convincing. I think it's a really nuanced and impressive performance from her. But the person who really steals the show is Sharon Stone, the glamorous, wonderful Sharon Stone, who plays Linda Lovelace's mother. And what's amazing about this performance, apart from the physicality of it, is that she only has very few scenes and she's doing quite horrible stuff. I mean, there's one very powerful scene where Linda decides to leave Chuck and comes home and begs her mother to let her stay for a few days. And her mother, who is deeply Catholic and deeply influenced by her own struggle and is very charmed by Chuck Traynor, pushes Linda back out toward him. And it could be so unsympathetic and so one-dimensional and so sort of evil, wicked mother. But Sharon Stone does bring some kind of depth to that. And we do get a good picture of the complexity of her motivations in that scene, which aren't necessarily forgivable, but you do really understand them. And I think it's a really fantastic performance. And kudos to whoever chose to cast her in that role. Elsewhere, I think Peter Sarsgaard, very effective. It's a very efficient performance as Chuck Traynor, the abusive husband. But I could just kind of feel he's getting stereotyped in these roles now. He played a very similar, if slightly less evil, version of that charismatic manipulator in An Education. Otherwise, the casting just feels a little bit like stunt casting. You know, lots of little cameos with famous faces, particularly James Franco as Hugh Hefner and Chloe Sevigny. It's sort of, you don't really know why they're needed in those roles. They don't really have much to do. And at times becomes quite distracting. So overall, I think Lovelace is a profoundly moving, it's a tough watch. And really, I think, you know, a movie that deserves to be seen. And so long as you go into it knowing that this is not Boogie Nights, it's not going to be a condemnation of the entire porn industry, that it's just going to be a very sad personal story about domestic abuse, then I think you're not setting yourself up for any disappointment in terms of the movie's ambition or reach. So if you've seen Lovelace and agree or disagree with my take, please feel free to leave a comment on the blog. And I can also very highly recommend checking out Linda Lovelace's autobiography, Ordeal. It's a very tough read, but it gives you much more depth behind this story. Lovelace has a running time of 93 minutes and has been rated R in the USA and 18 in the UK for strong sex, sex references and domestic abuse. The movie played Sundance in Berlin earlier this year and is currently on release in the USA, Canada, the UK and Ireland. The full release schedule for the film can be seen on the written review at bina007.com. And of course, we have the credits music, which is part of the wonderful soundtrack of this film. It's Keep on Trackin' by Eddie Kendricks.